now Stigma of Mental Illness Radio on CosmicBroadcasting.com and the Cosmic Broadcasting app.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Chrissy Hodges, and you're listening to the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio. I hope you're having a great day, and I also hope that you had a great Thanksgiving last week. I know that I did miss being here with you on the air for Thanksgiving. It is weird going a long time without doing a show and without hearing an inspiring story that gets me all pumped up about mental health. I had a lot of great food. I spent a lot of time at the airport, which was good at some times and not so good at some times. And I hope that you had a wonderful day, too. And I hope your holiday season is going well. This can be a tough time for a lot of people. And I would just like to encourage you to just be in the moment, keep your head up, and enjoy the holidays with the people that you love the best that you can. I am going to talk about something very briefly that may seem a little off topic. However, it has been on my mind as of the last couple of days. And just so you know, this is strictly my opinion. You may disagree with me, although I make that pretty clear during most of my shows. I want to comment about something that's happened in our country in the last couple of days. I was talking to my producer about this actually when I first called him this morning. I just want to comment about the Eric Garner situation. And it was just the police officer was not indicted. And there's a lot of protests going on. And there are a lot of really angry people, including yours truly, right here. And I think in the last couple of weeks, if you are on Facebook or social media, or if you're on any sort of internet, TV, anything, you've seen all of these people ranting on different sides of the race issue. We've got this group over here screaming that, you know, there is no race issue in America. And then we have these people over here who are going, hello, wake up, there is. And I'm this person kind of in the middle, not really siding with either. First of all, because I don't necessarily think that I can side with anybody. I sit out and listen and watch, and I just feel sorry for everybody. How this relates to what I'm doing is this. First of all, no one can understand what it's like to be someone else, ever, unless you do your best to be empathetic and put yourself in the other person's shoe. Now, for me to put myself in a black person's shoes, I can be empathetic, but I will never understand what it is like, the discrimination that goes on, the racial profiling that goes on. I know that it happens because I have friends that it happens to. However, when you have something that happens like this, and you have hordes of people that are standing up in protest, if you're on the other side screaming that there is no racial divide and there's nothing going on and y'all are being victims and this is all in your head, I mean, really? Do you actually think that there are that many quote-unquote victims in the world that are just going to protest for nothing? We need to try as a society. I just put a quote on Facebook by John Stewart about our society. We really need to try as a society. And you know why I feel passionate about this? Because my work has to do with a group of people who are discriminated against, people who are mentally ill, including me. I have walked in these shoes, so I understand that. We need to try as a society to practice empathy. Why are you standing up on a pedestal screaming that you think that something doesn't exist when you have no idea whether or not you are, whether it does, because you're not part of it? I could be equally as offended as someone who's standing up saying, you know, every time some shooting happens and all of a sudden we've got, you know, these dumbasses yelling from the top of their place that mentally ill people should not be able to have guns. And it's all about mental illness and it's all about this. You don't think that I get offended? Well, I can't go out and get a gun because I'm deemed mentally ill? You have never walked in my shoes. You've never walked in someone's shoes who are mentally ill. You, and not that you're not allowed to have an opinion, but just pipe down and have some empathy. My hope is that through all this that's happened in Ferguson and now with this Eric Garner case, that we really do take a deep look at where we're at as a country, not only with race, but with immigration, with people who are screaming against immigration. Again, they're not walking in those people's shoes, you know, and especially about the mentally ill population as well, because that's what I'm passionate about. We all take a deeper look at it. We stop screaming about what it is we want or don't want politically. And for a second, remember that we're all human beings, number one. We're all neighbors, and we're all in this together. My vision is that in the coming years, that we can really try to unite together instead of against each other, because the last thing we need is to be divided even more. That's my rant. Thank you for listening. I've been super upset about all of this, and it's hard to know what to say. It's hard to know, you know, it's hard to know whether I could put something on Facebook because, hey, I might offend someone because I feel this way, but I don't want to be that person anymore. I want to stand up for what I believe and hope that other people do too, and we can start to understand each other. On that note, thank you for listening. I have a guest today that I've known for a while. He's actually been on, but briefly before. Jeff Zinn is a friend of mine and just a colleague of mine that's doing, we're charging down the same path together, doing our best to spread awareness and show people what the reality of mental illness looks like. Jeff is a life coach, speaker, and mentor that specializes in bipolar and mental health recovery. I'm going to let him tell the story, but I'm just going to give you a little bit of background. At the age of 47 in 2001, he was diagnosed with bipolar, acute stress, and anxiety, and as a result spent 9 years in treatment. 5 years ago, he discovered the word recovery and now has dedicated his life in the hope of helping others find ways in which to explore their own recovery. I'm going to have him tell you about that, and we're going to talk about a few other topics that are really important to him and his journey on this. So, Jeff Zinn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I loved your speech at the beginning. I just thought it was incredible and just reinforced our symmetry together, and I really just loved it. So, kudos to you. That was very well spoken.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you liked it. I thought I was taking a little bit of a chance, but you know, something's got to be done, Jeff. Something's got to be done.
Yeah, it goes along with what I teach, which I'm passionate about. I've taught in many places in Denver and Aurora on mindfulness and the Four Agreements. Mm-hmm. And the Four Agreements specifically says not to take things personally, not to assume things, to always do your best, which is something that I find you doing all the time. And more importantly, the first agreement is impeccable word. And that's where I feel that the line is being crossed by people gossiping about each other. And that's what's causing so much drama in the world. And I loved when you talked about the being in the moment, because that's the definition of mindfulness, which is being in the moment or present. And the key word is there, without judgment. And that's what's going on in the world, is everyone is judging here. And then you have victims if they accept those judgments. And that's, you know, that was right on line with what I believe and what I teach in my, you know, in my own recovery and then to others. In fact, I'm starting tonight again at the Aurora, at the Aurora Resiliency Center, which, as you know, was dedicated to the people that were shot in the theaters. So that's something that I'm feel very strong about.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question that's kind of off the topic of mental health, but not necessarily, but just something, a question of what you just said. Jeff, why do you think it is? And you can relate this into what you and I are passionate about with mental illness. But why do you think it is, Jeff, that we, as a society, are so judgmental?
You know, there's so many reasons, and I don't want to assume, as the agreement is, a lot. I think for me, when I was living in an unconscious spirit, meaning that I wasn't even aware of my own self, so I would do things that I wasn't even aware of, like judge. And not only just judge others, but judge myself. And then I became the victim of my own judgments. So I think that people are just not aware of what they're doing because they're so preconditioned through society to judge. I mean, that's how we're brought up. We're domesticated, as Don Ruiz says, from, you know, who's the author of The Four Agreements, to, you know, believe all the things we've been taught, right or wrong. And that's how we become judgment, you know, judges. And because we've been judged our whole life, you know, through our parents, through our peers, through our teachers. So that's a learned behavior. And I that's what I think, you know. I know that in my life, that's where I was, for sure.
I'm just about to publish a blog. And at the beginning of the blog, I say, which is a quote from myself, it takes our entire life to deprogram us from the first 18 years.
Oh, yeah, and Don Ruiz talks about that so much. You know, this domestication and all of, you know, like a dog, you know, right and wrong. We're like computers, I feel, you know, like our brain has just put all this information and we're just carrying it with us. And, you know, until you become conscious of the viruses, you can't fix them. And that's the biggest issue, is people are not aware, I believe, of their own viruses. And they just continue on that path until either they get hit over the head like you and I did, you know, with a mental illness or a tragedy of some kind or an awakening of some sort. And that's the kind of people that I've run into that have become conscious and are making a difference are people that have really had to go through an event or events that changed their whole perspective on what life really is. Or, as a friend of mine who's actually coming to Denver, Lisa Bellini, says, in this world now we have children that are already born conscious, and they're called the Indigo children. So, you know, I'm not that child, so I don't know about that, but I find it interesting that it would be great if now we're starting whole generations of people that are already conscious. I wish I was, because it took me, you know, many, many, almost 57 years of my life to become, you know, what I would consider conscious now.
Mm-hmm. Kind of woken up.
Right. You took a sledgehammer. Two sledgehammers.
There's no better way to wake up.
I guess so. A truck had to hit me or a sledgehammer. Oh, but I'm glad it did. I'm really grateful, and I talk about this. I am so grateful that, you know, the universe decided to bless me with my illness, because it did wake me up. And I was just so miserable in that past life. So I'm very grateful.
Well, speaking of that past life, why don't you give us a picture of what your life was like, Jeff, before you did wake up?
Okay, I'd be happy to. I don't know how many of your listeners will want this, but I grew up in a Jewish family in Denver, Colorado, and I had what people said were the Barbie and Ken of Denver, the Jewish community, just gorgeous parents. And I thought that my life was a 10, you know, living in Denver, gorgeous parents, everyone loved. And found out in my early teens that they were going to go get divorced, and they had problems. And then at the age of 19, my mother was 42 when she took her own life. And then a few years later, my first cousin at the age of 27 took her life. A few years after that, my grandmother, my mother's mother, took her life. So I have the illness on both sides. And I didn't even consider, again, being so unconscious and unknowledgeable, uneducated, that I had the predisposition, or in other words, the likelihood of having a mental illness myself because I had it on both sides of the family. My cousin who took her life was on my dad's side. So just that fact alone could have possibly saved me, but I wasn't aware of it. So I continued, you know, showing definite signs of hypomania. And at the age of 21, left Denver to go into the women's apparel industry, where I ended up in New Orleans, where I married a Cajun woman. We had a Cajou wedding. My grandmother was a little upset when my then at the time mother-in-law asked her to, you know, as they say in the Cajun area, pinch some tails and suck head, which is off the crawfish. Was a little upset over that. That marriage lasted about 2 years because she left me for a riverboat captain. I guess it was because she thought she had more in common with a riverboat captain than a Jew from Denver. But anyway, it ended up that we got divorced. She left me. And after a series of manic episodes or hypomanic episodes, I ended up in Manhattan in 88. And started a company by the name of CM Shapes, which was a women's apparel company, and took it from $0 to $40 million in 7 years. And I believe, of course, that it was this energy that manic or hypomanic behavior allows you to think outside the box that helped us be so successful. I was the president and also the merchandiser of that company. And 5 years later, we split, and I had an emotional upheaval. And looking back, I now see that every time I had, like, the first divorce, an emotional upheaval, it definitely set me off or triggered me into what I would say is hypomania. This time, it started me on a path towards mania. I started a new company called Rebecca Jones. And I actually had the fortune of filming this whole event because I thought it was going to be a reality show, because this is right when Survivor came out in 2001. And I started filming it thinking this was, you know, to help brand the label Rebecca Jones, that it would become a reality show and very successful. And I thought it was going to become a jewelry company, a record company, a manufacturer of women's apparel company, TV show. I mean, I was starting to build up to that momentum of mania until I did hit that and then actually went into psychosis, which is all in the film. And then I came out of the and was hospitalized, which I write about, and it's on my website and talk about. But real shortly – I haven't been that short so far, but how I got hospitalized was my ex-wife, my second ex-wife, brought me to a psychiatrist under the realization or under me thinking that it was for our marriage counseling, and it turned out to be that two police officers came over and escorted me to a mental hospital right across the street. And I spent 5 days there.
And
wow. And when I returned, I had to go back to work. I had no recovery period. They just put me on lithium and some other medications. And I spent the next 4 years in total misery and depression, and certainly thought about taking my life, driving off the road for commute, and ended up being totally disabled in 2005. So what appeared, what took place after that was a series of events that led to my second episode, where I went off my medication again and started a company called the Zinternet, which was a online presence. And I was going to do shows around the world showing how to recover from mental illness using holistic approaches and not medication, and ended up having a severe psychotic manic episode and was put onto a gurney in Manhattan again and brought to a hospital, this time for 2 weeks. and went back into my drug addiction, which I had no idea I had that dual diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I, at that time, this is in 2009, April 2nd, which was my mother's birthday, and I ended up accepting not only my mother's addiction to her own drugs, my dad's addictions, and forgave them, and in essence, at that point, forgave myself and started on this path of true recovery, which I went back to school, got a certificate from the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey for psych rehab, and started working for NAMI, which I'm now a state trainer for peer-to-peer, in our own voice speaker, family connections, all and a couple more. But the main thing I learned was that, okay, medication is important and treatment is important, but the recovery issue became my mainstay, which means to me the goals is to improve the quality of life every day and to integrate back into society, meaning to become a contributing member of society, and then to set goals and achieve them. And since that moment, you know me, I've just continued making my life better. I now just got married to the most incredible woman I've ever met, October 5th. And I have a new website, and the movie finally finished after 13 years. And I'm helping people every day, either teaching or working with, or you know, anything that I can do. You and I worked with Charge at their event together, and I just love every day of my life for the most part. Was I too long?
No. And just so everyone knows, Jeff, his last name is Zen, and he is the punster with his last name. So when he said Zinternet, I just laughed a little.
Well, that was all. That's kind of what happens when you hit mania, and I call it really now, and I'm sure others do too, egomania, because when I developed this, it was the site said, you know, Zinternet, but it was all about being Zintertaining, Zinformational. We had our own, what are they called? A Zendowment. So it all became about Zen. And all the focus was on me, and I had like these 12 disciples. I thought I was like Jesus reborn. I mean, it really reached a point where obviously I hit a psychosis, and I have actual footage again of all of this that is in the movie. And I put on a show called The Man I See, which is the manic, because it was MAN-I-C, which is the name of the movie, A Man I See. But it is the footage from that show, I think, would make Charlie Sheen's show look, you know, like a you know, Mr. Rogers. It was really, really bizarre. And when I watch it, it's still, you know, I produce some sweat on my brow for sure. I can't believe it.
Jeff, when you went into where you are now, which is, you know, what I like to call acceptance recovery, living successfully with bipolar, during all of those times, and so there were several times in your life where you were hospitalized, what was the final aha moment of finally accepting that you have bipolar and that you needed to get help, and in turn that becoming your life's path of helping others? What was that moment? What did it look like for you?
Well, there was a couple times where there's a couple things that occurred. I mean, it was much easier for me to accept my living with mental illness, my diagnosis, than it was with the drug addiction issue. Because I was never told, I mean, I was told from the beginning that I had a mental illness, but I was never told about drugs, because they would ask me, you know, do drugs or whatever? And I'd go, yeah, occasionally. But, you know, I was smoking pot every day. So that part I didn't accept until 2009. And what helped that was, like what I had mentioned, was that for the first time I forgave both my mother and father for their addictions. My mother was addicted This takes you back to the 70s where women were, or possibly men too, but I know my mother for sure was taking diet pills and then sleeping pills to go to sleep. And she was addicted to them. And that's actually how she took her life, was took a lot of pills to overdose with a letter and such. So I forgave her. And then it began to accept that, wait a minute, this, I've taken on that part of her with my own addictions. And then my dad was a gambling and sex addict. And I took on that, accepted that in myself as well. So that was the bigger issue for me, was to forgive them first. And then I forgave myself, because I think that's where it starts, is you have to forgive either the universe, your God, or whatever you believe in. I personally believe in a universal spiritual aspect of the world. And so I forgave that, and therefore I believe that it's really forgiving me, because I think that I represent the universe, you know, in terms of my perception and perspective. So that was my biggest moment. And that happened after I was put into a gurney in St. Vincent's Hospital, which is now closed. Spent 2 weeks there. And when I got out, I started smoking pot again. And then I called the 800 number and said, I'm ready to take my life. And they took me in at IOP, an intensive outpatient program, which I learned about for the first time. In 9 years of this illness, I was told about NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness. I was told about going to AA. So everybody just wanted to treat me for that 9 years with medication, but there was nobody, no psychologist, psychiatrist, hospitals that ever said, Jeff, you need to go get peer help, peer support. And that was the turning point, because I got to hear other people's stories. And that's when I learned and thought to myself, Jeff, this is the path you need to take, is go help others, because help others have helped you understand that you can recover, that you can live a very good life despite, you know, anything. It doesn't even have to be a mental illness. It could be like I had to go through bankruptcy, divorce, physical issues. I've had heart issues. It doesn't matter. It's just the acceptance and believing and having hope that you can move forward. And I think that, you know, where I felt short when I wanted to take my life was I had no hope. And that's, you know, that is what peers or people, you know, whatever you're living with can help, because they give you that drop of hope, or that light, as I call it, of hope. And to me, that was the turning point for sure.
What peers do as a peer support is that we provide the opportunity to see that for others to see that they're not alone. Jeff and I both are. That's pretty much our life mission. Is we were both down at the very bottom, our rock bottom, and we help people to see that regardless of whether or not you hit rock bottom and whatever that looks like, you can always muster up the strength to take one step up the ladder. And, you know, Jeff and I both are living proof of that. And you do that very well. And I'm just so thankful for everything that you do.
Well, thank you. And likewise, Chrissy, you know, having had the opportunity to hear you speak when we spoke to the police officers or the police academy in Denver for their CIT training. To hear you speak was so inspirational for me. And, you know, it's sometimes you look at, or I should say, I look at people and I say to myself, how could this person have ever been down that road? They look fantastic. Mm-hmm. They sound fantastic. But sometimes I catch myself thinking, well, don't assume, you know, what happened, because we all have I had my trials, and if it wasn't for those trials, I wouldn't be on this radio show right now. I'd be, you know, selling garments to stores, or I would have taken my life. So it is people like you, it's people that you hear stories or you read about that will change the stigma on either mental illness or addiction, or it was the same way with all kinds of movements, even, you know, the gay community and lesbian community and, you know, people with cancer 30 years ago would never talk about it. Now, you know, it's the largest funded program. So that's where it starts. People have to talk about it.
Well, on that note, Jeff, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about all the things that you're doing now and a little bit more about your film. And thank you so much for being here today with us. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. Stick with us, and we're going to hear a lot more with Jeff Zinn coming up real soon after the break.
Don't miss Biz Talk with Claire Billingsley Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. Claire talks with people who have taken their own dreams and passions and worked them into a business adventure, helping other people do the same. The message is not only empowering, but genuinely motivating. That's Biz Talk at 11 a.m. Eastern Tuesdays. You're listening to Cosmic Broadcasting.
Radio without limits. Cosmic Broadcasting. What separates us from them?
Juda, Chilia, Qualite, Quality, Qualitet, Qualita, Qualidade, Quality, Jakost, Kajistva, Qualidad, Quality, Ansaud, Upora, Latu.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Quality.
It sounds the same no matter where you're from. Cosmic Broadcasting.
Host Chrissy Hodges. I hope you're enjoying your day over here in Denver, Colorado. It's a little bit on the chilly side, but sunny as usual. Over here in our state, we experience a lot of sunshine days. And I hope wherever you are, you're having a beautiful day as well. Thank you for tuning in today to our show. Each week, we have guests that come onto the show to talk about their personal experience with mental illness and how they live in recovery and acceptance and successfully with that mental illness. But sometimes we also have organizations that come on and they talk about what they're doing to help individuals that have mental illness or what they're doing to help eliminate stigma that surrounds mental illness. Next week, we are going to have Dr. Comrade come back on the show. He was on a few weeks ago. Months ago, maybe, and he's going to take some calls in with questions about mental health. He wrote a book on how to convince your loved one to get help. Now, this is a question I get all the time when I'm doing speeches. How can I help my loved one go get help when they need it? I am hardly qualified to answer that because sometimes I resist treatment a lot. So I would like for him to answer those questions for you and a couple questions that I have on my own. So we will have a call-in show next week. Now, if you don't feel comfortable calling in, first of all, you don't have to give your name. But if you don't feel comfortable calling in, please feel free to email any question to me or message me through Facebook at my page, The Stigma of Mental Illness Radio, or email me at ocd.chrissie@gmail.com. I'll make sure to get your question read on the air and answered, and I will make sure to send the response back to you via email. If you are interested in being a part of this positive movement that we are experiencing in our country, where stigma is being eliminated, where people with mental illnesses are able to come out and talk about it and not feel judged, to get this kind of support that my guest Jeff Zinn and I are doing with peer support and services that are being provided. Now, we've got a long way to go. However, there definitely is a movement going on. But one way you can help, if you feel like you want to help and you don't know what to do, is to support this program. My program comes on weekly. I have different guests every week. It's stories of hope, encouragement, and overall, it helps people to feel less alone. Individuals and family members who are helping to support the people who are struggling and suffering with mental illness. It can be the loneliest place in the world when you are down in the dumps and dealing with a major mental illness. Come to the show every single week, and it gives you a little bit of hope and encouragement. It gives you that, wow, if they can do it, I can do it. And it just makes you think you're not the only one walking this path. If you want to support this show, you can do it for as little as a dollar per program. And that helps fund. This show is completely listener funded. If you want to support it, go to www.patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. That's patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. There you'll find a little blurb about me, a little video, why I'm doing what I'm doing, and a way for you to pledge your support for each show. Now remember, my content is always free, no matter what. Every single show is available at www.cosmicbroadcasting.com in the archive section. But if you want to be someone that supports the movement, please feel free to visit that website and pledge your support. I also want to encourage you, if you are interested in having a radio broadcast show, you can always go to www.cosmicbroadcasting.com, find the contact information, and talk to Stacy or Lynn about having your own show. This is a great business to be a part of. We've got enthusiastic guests and people that support us through the process. I'm glad to be a part of it. So big shout out to Lynn, my producer, woohoo, and Stacy, the owner. Thank you for everything you do. Now, back to my guest today. I just quickly, Jeff, want to, before we get into all the wonderful things that you're doing, I thought that it was a very interesting correlation before we went to the break, because we started off this interview talking a little off topic, but not really, about how as we get older, we kind of wake up from the things that we've been programmed or taught to learn. And I thought it was really interesting how when you were talking about your dual diagnosis with bipolar and addiction, how it really was the accepting moment for you to finally forgive your parents because they were addicts, and for you to kind of realize, oh, wow, I'm an addict as well, and I need to get this under control. And I just think that just completely correlates for what we were talking about, that sometimes we don't even know what we're doing because we've been programmed. Do you agree with that?
Well, yes, totally. I mean, that's what I talked about, being unconscious. And that's what I define it as, is not being aware. And it's all about awareness to me and acceptance. You can't change anything if you don't accept whatever it is. It's the first step in the 12-step program, but it also is just life. I could correlate it even to, your sexuality. If you do not accept what that is, how can you, move forward with happiness? You'll just have the struggle and conflict between what it is you desire and what is reality. Totally agree. That is the main message of what I believe and what I've been, learning and studying, and it's brought me to that point, no question.
Now, Jeff has done a lot of different things to help bring awareness to mental health and people. And what I feel, Jeff, kind of encompasses you is, Jeff has an incredible presence. He's a tall dude and just one of those people that come in the room and demand attention. And, people like you are great representatives for our community, because it, just like you said, Jeff, before we went to break, it's, you look at someone and you think, oh, that person, how could they know what it means to be rock bottom, or how could they have been there? And then you hear the story and you go, whoa, I was off. And so Jeff has done so many things to in different areas to pull people and help spread awareness for mental health. I feel like everywhere I go in Denver, when it comes to mental health, people are like, oh, Jeff Zinn. Oh yeah, I know Jeff Zinn. So, let's first talk, Jeff. You touched on it a little bit, but tell us a little bit about the documentary and how difficult that was for you to film that and then to watch it back.
Sure. Thank you for all those accolades. I am big, but I sometimes I'm totally unaware of that, unconscious, sort of to say. But what happened was, like I had said, we filmed this Rebecca Jones back in 2001. And after I was hospitalized, I was unable to even watch it for 3 years. And I had changed jobs where Rebecca Jones wanted to be revived again by the company I was working with. So the president and I want to give a shout out to her. Lynn Seemers was just a wonderful lady and president of Don Kenny, which at that point also ran Delta Burke Clothing. And we wanted to resurrect Rebecca Jones. So I thought we could do it with the movie again. And so we went and watched it, and I was just sweating. I just could not believe my behavior. It was just a shock. And I certainly think that, you know, there was some laughter, and some crying and et cetera, a lot of emotions. So I didn't really do anything with it other than deciding to maybe we should just try to make this film, and send it to people to find out, you know, what this illness looks like. But as the years went on, nothing really happened. My editor and filmmaker, the original one, kept getting stuck. But we kept filming. I would call him into, like, Los Angeles when I was doing some more things with an organization called CEO Space, which is a startup, which is an organization that deals with startup companies from napkin ideas to mentors that help them. So we were involved with that, and he came to California and filmed that. I did some stand-up comedy, filmed that. So as the years went on, he continued to film, but we really didn't edit it to anything substantial. So in 2009, at my final break, let's hopefully my final break, because that's another thing, Chrissy, I think you're also aware, is my biggest hope now is that I never have a reoccurrence. When we talk in Our Own Voice program from NAMI, which discusses what kind of your own story, it comes to the last segment, which is hopes, dreams, and successes. And my biggest hope is that, or two biggest, is that I don't have a reoccurrence or a relapse, and that my children do not have to go through, my two sons have to go through this. But anyway, we decided to do interviews. So we interviewed a lot of people that were present at the different moments. And then my psychiatrist, my family, and it came out to where, again, my filmmaker got stuck. So I moved back to Denver 2.5 years ago. I start a group on mindfulness and the Four Agreements with Aurora Mental Health on Bethany. And lo and behold, there's a gentleman there by the name of Ted Winterburn who is taking my class. And I was just, you know, kind of connected with him. I said, so what do you do? He goes, well, I'm a filmmaker. I'm an editor. And I asked him, I said, well, are you really? He goes, yeah. In fact, I've won 5 Emmys. I go, oh, my gosh. I said, well, would you be interested in finishing the editing of my film? And he said, well, I'd take a look at it. And when he saw bits of it, he goes, you know, my two sons are living with bipolar. And I would love to do this pro bono for you. So, it was just, again, the universe. And he did it. And it took a lot of work. He had to organize everything. It was in total shambles, like 5 different hard drives and folders that weren't marked with anything. And we worked together on it for months. I was looking today, there must be 20 CDs or DVDs, the different versions. And we settled on this final one, and I'm very pleased with it. And in fact, I'll be showing it as a premiere, more or less, to Regis University has asked me to come show it to their pharmaceutical division, especially psychotropic divisions of the school, but everyone's invited. And I'm excited. Preliminary, the date's January 23rd, but we're still waiting for permission from the school with some paperwork. But I just think, you know, even though I must admit, even still when I watch it with others, I still do some points get that, you know, that sweat or that, you know, oh my gosh, that's me feeling. But then I go to my tool chest and just say, you know, don't take this personally and don't assume that people are thinking what you think they're thinking. So it helps me to manage it quite easily now, where before it was extremely difficult.
Well, and Jeff, just to clarify for my listeners who maybe not don't understand what you're saying in a way of why it makes you uncomfortable to watch. Just from my experience, and feel free if this isn't accurate. The way that I look at myself, and I agree with you, Jeff. It's, you know, my hope is that I will never ever get in that state of mind again. However, we always have to be vigilant. I mean, it's, you know, it's a lifetime disorder, so I always know there's the possibility that I could wake up tomorrow and be in a full blown episode. But the way that I try to describe it to people is, it's almost as if there are two sides of Chrissy. It's the normal everyday Chrissy, and then there's the OCD side of Chrissy, which is, when I'm in the OCD side of Chrissy, I don't remember or understand what it's like to be normal Chrissy. When I'm normal Chrissy, I don't understand, or I don't have a clue what it's like to be OCD Chrissy. And it's not a dual personality. What it is that it is as if someone takes a shade and puts it over your brain, and you're not allowed to look at anything other than what you're going through in the moment. If I were to see, you know, trying to remember myself in my last major episode, which was 2011, I remember the things that I would say to the people that are in my support system, but I just think to myself, how did I even get to that place? Who is that person? I can't even comprehend it. So for Jeff to be able to look back on a video and see how he was, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but you probably don't even remember in a way who that person is and how you even got to that point.
Well, I think your explanation was very valid, and I hope the listeners understood that. I often use because I experimented with so many drugs, I use the analogy of being on an hallucinogenic. When you're taking acid and such, in that moment, you think the world is a certain way. Your perception of reality, I call it a vibration, or somebody else did, and I picked it up. You're on a certain vibration, and then when you come off that, you want to go back there, but you can't, obviously, unless you take the drug again, but you're not going to be the same high. It's the same with my illness. In being manic, it's a great feeling. It's the greatest feeling ever. You know, I've done every drug that you can think of except the ones you shoot by needle, but I loved it. You know, I thought I was the greatest individual on the planet and have more powers than any Superman I ever thought of being. But once I lost that, I never, you know, I couldn't remember everything like you. I could remember some parts, but to watch it is so painful at first because it's frightening to think that we can get there, you know, that it's even possible to believe that, you know, all those things. But on the other side, what I've learned is not to dismiss individuals with mental illness, particularly those with mania, that come up with these ideas that people say, well, you're crazy. You know, that'll never happen. You can never do that, because that's how the world's changed from people that think outside the box. And so I've learned to believe in my own self. I've done things that I thought would never happen, and certainly people have thought would never happen, because I don't want to dismiss the goals that, you know, I've achieved. And what I also have found and question is that in some societies, mania or mental illness is thought of as being a shaman in some societies. And yet in this society, we obviously consider it to be a sick brain. Mm-hmm. So in my viewpoints, that's where I am with that. And the other thing that triggered my thoughts is how important it is for me, and I know that you feel the same way, is to create tools or to have the tools, learn the tools to move past any type of triggers that you might have and not to go forward. There's great programs out there like RAP, Wellness Recovery Action Plan, my classes, reading books, the NAMI's peer-to-peer class. So anything that anyone can learn, exercise, eat correctly, are things that I really try to encourage myself to do, and certainly if anyone would listen, for those that do listen, I would try to help them with their own tools that they feel would be good, because it's so necessary. Relapses are not fun, whether they're depressive, OCD. I just saw a thing on my television last night that 8% now they're saying of the population is depressed, living with depression. Now that, I can't believe it's probably higher than that, because there's a lot of people that don't even report it. So, you know, so that's kind of where I'm that's where I'm spending my energy and time, is helping those people to understand some of the tools that helped me. It's not like I feel that, you know, this is the only way and you have to learn my way, or, you know, I'm an evangelist or anything. I just think because they work so well for me, and I've connected, I think, now over 300 people in this courses to help them understand the tools that helped me, which were the Four Agreements, The Mastery of Love by Don Ruiz, and Mindfulness by Jon Kabat-Zinn, and Thich Nhat Hanh, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Those are the tools that really helped me. And then the NAMI peer-to-peer was a great introductory course for people that know nothing, you know, about living with mental illness. So that's kind of my life. And I think the movie, and Jeff Zimbalist, who was one of the creators and did some of the work for it.
What was his name?
His name is Jeff and Mike Zimbalist, relatives of Efren Zimbalist. And actually, they're award-winning documentarists. They did the 30-30, the two Escobars. And
I thought that was a play on your name.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did mention that, you know, Z and Z. And yeah, it just, when you go, people have mentioned this a lot, and it's in a category. When you start climbing the ladder of hypomanic or mania, you start to see symbols and relationships to things that normally you wouldn't. Meaning I wouldn't, and I assume that, without, you know, saying the word assume, I think others do too, because they write about that. So it is funny that I had so many Z's come into my life. In fact, it's in the movie as well.
Get what you put out, Jeff. You're putting out a lot of Zins, and that's what you're getting back.
A lot of Z stuff. That's actually my logo, has two Z's in it as well, because it's just kind of, you know. But anyway, in the movie, what he said, and what I believe as well, is I don't think there's anything out there that actually shows a journey over 13, 14 years into recovery that is organic. It's not like recreated. It's not somebody, you know, it's all, you know, interviews that people say, well, Jeff was this, Jeff. But you're seeing a businessman who is making $400,000 a year lose everything because of the illness, and then come back again and lose it all over again, and then go into recovery and what that looks like. But I don't know of any other film that can do that. And I think it's a miracle. I think it's the universe's miracle. And I, no matter how many times, Chrissy, that people said, you're an idiot, this will never happen, I can't believe you're doing this. You know, family, friends, you know, acquaintances, everybody would say this, except a few people. But I kept at it because I believed, why would the universe allow or help, you know, have this documented if there wasn't an end purpose? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's why I'm driven so much to make this happen. And it is happening. And, you know, and I don't care, you know, I've come to realize that the universe will unfold when it's supposed to, not when Jeff Zinn wants it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been, for me, the biggest relief, because it's unfolding on its own. And mm-hmm. I'm out there every day just telling people, well, this is the greatest document, you know, blah, 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 blah. I mean, me meeting you and having this opportunity is an opportunity. Me talking to Regis and then showing a film clip, and they jumped all over it. I mean, the universe is opening it up, not me being the salesman that I was, because I can't do that anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to push and sell, and you know, I just want to help and open up.
Well, you don't have to be a good salesman sometimes when you just have true intention. Like Earl Nightingale says, you become what you think. And when you put that out there, then you get that back.
Yeah, that's the secret.
Well, Earl Nightingale was one of the original. Do you know who he is?
I do.
Oh, I mean, his recordings. Ugh, his voice. I mean, seriously. And it is just, and I think, you know, that message gets, like, in The Secret, it just gets regurgitated over and over and over. And it's just right there for us to grab it. But it takes a lot of what you're doing, awareness and being able to have that sort of intention and trust the universe for it to really come into fruition, which I think is hard for us to do.
Exactly. I just want to state before our time's up a couple quick things is that the site that I that I'm up on is Jeffrey, which is Jeffrey, zen.com. And I'm doing something with this film where I'm taking snippets and then writing about them so that people can actually witness and then get my perception. And I'm really wanting others to respond, you know, of their own experience with, you know, what they're seeing in their own life stories. So I'd really like it for people to see it. And because of your show, if anyone goes on the site and writes to me, I will certainly send them for free the link to the movie. So
you'll have
that opportunity. And I'm teaching right now at starting tonight at the Aurora Resiliency Center, 1298 Peoria Street in Aurora from 4 to 7. And I'm teaching on how to run groups at Aurora Mental Health.
Okay.
So, that's what I'm doing currently along with speaking and other such things.
Well, we have just 1 minute. So if you, Jeff, you said something about in other countries, people don't necessarily look at mental illness like this sometimes. But in our country, we look at it as a sickness in the mind. Just to wrap up really quick, tell us what it's going to take. What is it going to take for us to start looking at mental illness as something different than just a sickness in the mind?
I think what you and I are doing and others to join in, and I would love to see a star, you know, somebody with a big presence come out and talk about their recovery and what's happened and how it's made them a better person. But just to embrace it, embrace everything. You know, it's like what you talked about at the very beginning of the show. Accept and love and, you know, embrace whatever it is. Because it doesn't mean it's sick. It just means it's different.
Yep.
And I think that's what your message was at the beginning. That's why I identified with it. And that will take what the gay movement did and other movements is for, I think, either political, you know, icons or stars, quality people to say, it's great. You know, I have it and I embrace it. That's what I think.
Well, I think that you live that mantra, and I just want to thank you for everything you do, and that I'm just honored to be your colleague and on the same path, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and it's an honor to know you and likewise, and I look forward to seeing what changes you and I can make in certainly our local area and hopefully expand that to other areas.
Definitely. And if you are interested more in Jeff's story, go to www.jeffreyzen.com. It is on my Facebook page at the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio. You can access it through there as well. And go to his page and subscribe. You want to read his blogs as well. Thank you for joining us. I hope that you enjoyed the show today. If you have any comments or questions, I'd love to hear from you. Also, what are your questions for mental health? Email me so we can have them on the show tomorrow, or call in. That's ocd.chrissie@gmail.com. And don't forget, if you want to make a positive pledge toward change and eliminating stigma, that's www.patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. We are changing the way people view mental illness. One personal story at a time here at the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio with Chrissie Hodges and the Cosmic Broadcasting team.